The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Who Decides War? Everard Best met Tayla D. Amore on the streets of New York City's Lower East Side. Years later, the duo would helm a defining fashion brand of the times. The Tumblr age has birthed a slew of names and superstars, some of whom are only now peaking, like Tyler, the Creator, and Frank Ocean, also born from the flames of reblogs and reposts, is the streetwear brand Who Decides War. The principals behind it, life partners and business partners, Everard Best and Tayla D. Amore. My dad came first, and then my uncle came after, to pursue a degree in design at Fashion Institute of Technology, Best says. But in the 90s, when they were starting the business, it was very hard for people of color to break through as designers. There was a lot of prejudice and barriers to break through. It was in that Long Island location that Best was able to soak up the meticulous process of constructing garments. However, he never fully envisioned making a career out of it. I never really knew that I wanted to be in fashion. It wasn't really a thing for me as a child, he says. But as I got older, clothing became a way for me to express myself. That evolved out of necessity over the ruling agenda of baggy pants and everything oversized that dominated in the mid-aughts. Best began raiding the women's sections of stores to find more snug fit of denim he preferred. Back then, there wasn't a super skinny jean like a Levi's 511 for men. I remember going to Zara and buying a woman's size 10 jeans. Necessity also led D. Amore to designing clothes. Growing up with limited means, she learned how to sew from her mother, then began creating her own outfits from scratch instead of going to name brand stores to buy them. I had to learn how to make clothes to be able to have new things sometimes, she remembers. My mom was always tactical, savvy, and resourceful, and those are things that I intrinsically picked up from her. The funniest thing was, when we recently moved into our new office, I brought the first sewing machine that my mom gave me, which was this tiny little handheld machine. I still keep it with me all the time. Like Best, D. Amore found denim to be a pain point as she was trying to fit in as a teenager in school. I was awkwardly tall and skinny, so my jeans would always end up being high waters. I always had a flood around me, she says. Buying tall jeans online was really expensive, so I had to figure out how to extend them on the bottom myself. I was doing a lot of extensions. Perhaps this shared struggle with shortcomings in the denim industry led Who Decides War to become masters of it. Under the Eve Barado name, the two have established a reputation for amped up denim. The jeans are usually perfectly imperfect with artful slashing and rips, and they are often outfitted with fabrics like tulle. Best and Dior were among the first to incorporate lace with denim jeans seriously. Now it's one of their signatures. When Virgil wanted to build out Off-White's denim offering in 2019, it was Best he called to collaborate. What began as Best specialized focus on handcrafted custom denim jeans has evolved into a full-scale designer label with seasonal collections of both men's and women's clothing. When Dior became fully enveloped in the Yves Bravado brand, which would later become Who Decides War, Best says their first order of business was to get a lawyer. As Dior explains, we developed and grew our company when collaborations were really exploding. We have been doing collaborations since we were babies in this, but we knew we needed a strong legal side to look over all of the contracts that we were doing and any partnerships. The two led a small team of 9 at their New York studio. But from the outside looking in, you wouldn't know it. Thanks to celebrity endorsements and collaborations with worldwide brands like Levi's and H&M, where they recently designed a collection in collaboration with the estate of Jean-Michel Basquiat, Who Decides War has managed to scale up impressively, meeting the needs of a demanding industry. Even more of an anomaly in the fashion biz, Best and Dior own 100% of the brand. We run a tight ship on purpose. I don't ever want too many cooks in the kitchen, Dior says. Anytime I am creating or doing something, I like to be very efficient. Part of that efficiency is knowing exactly where to allocate resources. Rather than dedicate a substantial budget to ads, Best and Dior have funneled their funds into highly memorable fashion shows. We don't do a lot of marketing throughout the year or any paid placements, says Best. Most of what we do is organic stuff, like it's just our social media. We learned that from Virgil, Dior adds. To offset the extravagant cost of a runway show, according to the business of fashion, even a simple no-frills show can cost up to $300,000. The duo has outsourced some of the bills by taking on sponsorships and making collaborative integrations within the production itself. One show we came maybe 75% out of pocket, Best says, but since then we've tried to find the right people to bring in to create a product or highlight, so the strain is not financially all on us. Despite their ability to stage a show successfully, season after season, Dior admits it's not a must-have for similar brands on the rise. The main thing is working on your product so tirelessly that when you finally decide to put it out, it's undeniably for you, she advises. That's what it's more about, rather than any of the glitz and glam surrounding a show. Streetwear is everywhere, and yet even when heavyweights like Pharrell Williams seamlessly take charge of a historic fashion house like Louis Vuitton, the term remains almost derogatory, often used as a dog whistle to describe designers who openly embrace hip-hop culture or t-shirts over Oxfords. Streetwear has become commercialized and somewhat diluted in the same breath. Many designers are given the label for merely featuring a rapper in their promotional campaigns, yet few of them actually understand what it means to be a brand of the streets. Who decides war is streetwear in the most authentic and celebratory sense? The label recently released a capsule collection with beloved Harlem hip-hop collective, The Diplomats, and its fall-winter 2023 collection titled Politics as Usual, references a track off Jay-Z's debut album. But underpinning those nods to street culture, Who Decides War is what people are actually wearing in places like Fulton Street in Brooklyn, as well as on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. The biggest blessing is that people can get up and look at an entire wardrobe and choose to put on our clothes, says D'Amore. All these heritage brands that you see, they're all streetwear too. When people wake up, they want to feel good about themselves and want a little bit of amour before going outside for the day. They want what they're wearing to say something. That's all they want. It's like putting on a little Dior to go to Soho. It's about feeling. And that is the same feeling we want to emit through our clothing. The next article is titled, How the Diaspora Dines During the Holidays. An Egyptian restaurateur, a Guyanese recipe developer, and a Dominican pastry chef dish on creating fare that celebrates their vibrant heritage this season. Throughout the U.S. and Canada, immigrant communities bring ideas and inspiration from varying ancestries, and these often lead to unforgettable holiday meals. The African diaspora is vast. Descendants can trace their heritage to the mother continent, as well as to migrations from the Caribbean and Latin America. Restaurateur Mohammed, recipe developer and author Althea, and pastry chef and author Paola can attest to this scope, and they are shaking up the classics with flavors from their family's origins. Arriving in Toronto from Egypt in 1985, Mohammed's family started a catering business, Masrawi Egyptian Kitchen, in 2014, and then opened their popular restaurant of the same name in Ontario to fulfill the desire for Egyptian food in the Greater Toronto area. People don't come to us for a cuisine, Mohammed says, but instead to feel at home, no matter their ethnicity. During the holidays, they receive special requests to combine flavors of North America and North Africa, resulting in the lamb shank fada flatbread covered in a myriad of delightful ingredients, and turkey packed with grape leaves instead of traditional stuffing. The gentle bitterness and lemony undertone of the grape leaves complement the gaminess of the turkey. The meat's earthy and slightly briny flavor adds a fresh and mildly herbal note that still tastes like a holiday. Althea moved to Brooklyn from Guyana with her family in November 2000, in the midst of the American Thanksgiving traditions. The spreads were appealing, but they differed from Guyanese dishes like spicy pepper pot, which she was accustomed to at the holidays. There was also no rice on the table, and Althea had an aversion to jiggly canned cranberry sauce. She made it work because on all other days, her appetite was easily satisfied by Caribbean restaurants. But moving to Denver with her husband in 2011 and then lacking those options forced her to get creative. I missed Caribbean food so much in Denver that I started the blog. She says of her Matemgi platform, which offers authentic Guyanese recipes. Althea now celebrates Thanksgiving with jerk turkey, mashed edos, a root vegetable, and cook up rice, a one-pot meal with marinated meat, beans, and aromatic herbs. The cranberry jelly, as she calls it, is now cranberry chutney freshened up with mango, cherries, and white wine. Smoky jerk flavors with vibrant, tangy, sweet chutney make for fantastic day after Thanksgiving sandwiches. Paola is a first-generation Dominican-American from New York City. Growing up in the Bronx, she was raised in a cultural hullabaloo among predominantly Caribbean folks, many from Jamaica and Haiti. Her baking reflects all these influences. Christmas is our holiday, she says. Throughout the season, Paola and her friends have a tradition of exchanging homemade libations. She shares her family recipe from Coquito, while the others swap drinks like cremas and sorrel. The rum punch recipe of a Jamaican friend's father with hibiscus, mango, and pineapple is honored via the rum punch cake recipe in her book, Bodega Bakes, Recipes for Sweets and Treats Inspired by My Corner Store. Paolo transforms his drink into a soak for a modified pound cake that isn't too dense or soft, and that turns pink like the fruity Caribbean cocktail. The purpose of all these dishes is deeper than celebrating traditional North American holiday traditions, Paola says. It's not just about folks coming to a foreign land. We are creating new ways for us all to be together. A recipe by Althea. Cranberry, mango, and cherry chutney. The ingredients are 2 cups fresh cranberries, 1 cup diced fresh mangoes, 1 cup dried tart cherries, 1 cup granulated sugar, 1 cup dry white wine, 2 tablespoons apple cider vinegar, 1 cinnamon stick, 1 navel orange. Directions. First, add all the ingredients except the orange to a saucepan. Then juice the orange. Add the juice and their rinds to the saucepan. Mix everything well. Secondly, turn the saucepan to high heat and bring to a boil. Third, when mixture starts to boil, reduce heat to medium and let simmer for 15 to 20 minutes, occasionally stirring until the liquid's reduced by half. Then remove the orange rinds and discard. Lastly, Remove the chutney from the heat, allow to cool completely, and refrigerate until ready to serve, cold or warmed up. A recipe by Paella. Rum Punch Cake Soak. Ingredients: 1/2 cup golden rum, 1/4 cup pineapple juice, 4 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 1 cup sugar, 3 tablespoons ground hibiscus leaves or hibiscus powder, 2 tablespoons diced mango, 1 teaspoon vanilla extract, 4 cinnamon sticks, 3/4 teaspoon kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon citric acid. Directions: in a medium saucepan, combine all but 1 tablespoon of the rum, 1/4 cup water, the pineapple juice, butter, sugar, hibiscus leaf, mango, vanilla, cinnamon, and salt, and bring to a boil over medium-high heat. Cook until the butter melts completely and the sugar has dissolved. Remove from the heat and stir in the remaining 1 tablespoon rum and the citric acid. The next article is titled Mixtapes to Millions, Hip Hop's CEO Class. Hip hop stars like Rick Ross have built multi-million dollar business empires very simply, being the life of the party. Rick Ross asked himself 2 simple questions when it comes to pursuing business partnerships. Is this something that I love? Is this something that I believe in? As the rapper explains, if I don't believe in it, my passion won't be there and it will be useless for us both. Music was the passion that Ross, born William Leonard Roberts II in Miami-Dade County, Florida, first pursued. Before I was in the 5th grade, I knew I wanted a record label to be able to do what I wanted to do with my music, says the 9-time Grammy Award nominee. He signed to Def Jam Records in 2006 and launched his own label, Maybach Music Group, just 3 years later. 2 years before starting Maybach, however, Ross began to expand outside the recording industry, becoming a co-owner of Miami Gardens Hip Hop Grub Spot in 2007. Though he dissolved his investment in the first ever hip hop fast food franchise months later, his foray into the restaurant business was only the beginning. Wingstop was the first franchise that I stepped out on alone, he says, of his 2011 venture. I brought just me and my team, which is my mom and my sister. This purchase expanded the chain to Memphis, Tennessee. It was as simple as me loving lemon pepper wings, Ross adds with a laugh. I bought my first franchise, and from there I stopped counting when I reached 25. Ross's nickname, Rosé, often mentioned in his lyrics, somewhat foreshadowed his next big venture, a partnership with Sovereign Brands, the makers of Luc Belair Rare Rosé, in 2013. It was at a party in New York City that DJ Clue sent Ross a bucket of the signature black bottles, introducing him to the champagne. That was around when Prince had his club on Washington Avenue in South Beach, and Madonna would be in there. And I'm sitting to the side asking, "What are those bottles?" Ross recalls, I remember the bottle girl saying, that's rosé. And I was like, okay, I know what it is now. That night at the party, when DJ Clue introduced me to Luc Belair, it was over. Since then, Ross has been Sovereign's most prominent spokesperson with the brand, even introducing a Brut Gold Rick Ross edition of its sparkling wine. Sovereign Brands has been winning, and that's what makes it easy for me as a partner, Ross says. I want to work with great people, people who can inspire me, push me, and vice versa. In 2014, Ross received pushback from naysayers when he was contemplating the purchase of Evander Holyfield's 109-room estate in Fayetteville, Georgia, called Villa Vitoresa, which he has since dubbed the Promised Land. People said, don't do it, Rosé. It's going to cost $1 million to cut the grass, he recalls. I said, shoot, I'm going to go buy some lawnmowers then. The $5.9 million purchase has paid off, with the compound serving as the site for the fictional Zumundane Palace in 2021's Coming to America sequel. It also became home to one of Ross's additional ventures, the annual Rick Ross Car and Bike Show, built from his own fleet of more than 100 vehicles, which are available for rent. In addition, he launched a detailing collection of car washes and waxes under the brand name, The Slippery Soap. I couldn't imagine upward of 15,000 people in the front yard here. Concerts, cars, people flying in from different countries, says Ross, of his initial vision for the property. But once again, it's something that we love. We don't focus on a particular number. It's about the love, and we execute. This is a surprising remark from the man who, early in his career, declared himself the biggest boss that you've seen thus far in the 2008 single, The Boss. But Ross never intended to remain the biggest, taking pride in the business blueprint he says he's laid for the next generation of rappers. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Aver Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.